to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Hairhuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And I'm going to start today's show in a place that I know Adam's going to be rather excited to do this discussion. Talk about Pistons basketball.
Oh, yay. Of course. Yay. I can't wait.
I know the NBA is your favorite sport. Don't even lie and pretend like it isn't.
Oh, yeah.
But we have some things we need to talk about. And namely, the NBA draft lottery, which is, quite frankly, fundamentally broken.
So the worse than the NHL?
Yeah, worse than, or at least as bad, maybe worse than the NHL, yes.
Okay.
So with that in mind, the draft lottery is yesterday, sometime like in the middle of the afternoon, because apparently even the NBA realizes that there's nobody in this draft that's going to be a game changer or that anyone is going to care about.
Yep.
Which, you know, I guess smart on them for coming to that conclusion when they did. But basically no one saw it. But the draft lottery happened. The worst team in basketball, as you might remember, by a considerable margin, is your Detroit Pistons.
So they got the number one pick, right?
No, of course not, Adam. What kind of stupid question is that?
Well, whoever got the number one pick probably has a small television market, right?
Also, no. It gets better than that, though.
Oh, boy.
Because you want to know who's going to be the number one pick in this year's NBA draft?
Now, I have not seen this. So I'm just going to go ahead and say Chicago Bulls.
No, actually.
No?
The Atlanta Hawks.
Man, sports world, they love that Atlanta TV market. They need it for whatever reason. Basketball, it makes sense. Hockey, not so much.
But here's the problem, the main issue that I have with that. The Atlanta Hawks, as some might remember, made the, going to play in the play-in round or some such thing this year. Like, they weren't, it's not like this team was absolute, just complete, utter garbage. Like, this is a team that they played in the play-in tournament. They were the 10 seed. Now, granted, they lost to 9 seed Chicago, but they did make it into the play-in tournament. And here they are with the number one overall draft pick. I get that technically, apparently, the play-in tournament is not officially part of the playoffs, but
it happens after the last game of the season, so yeah. I think that still counts as a playoff game.
Exactly. Like, it should still count as a playoff spot in that you shouldn't be eligible for the number one overall draft pick if you make it to the play-in tournament. Meanwhile, the worst team in basketball by a significant margin is going to be picking fifth.
Garbage.
The NFL or the NBA draft lottery is broken. There's no way around it. And in the last 5 years, Detroit, like, it doesn't matter. Like, whoever ends up with the worst team in the league, the worst record, has not gotten the number one overall draft pick. How is that possible? Is it really that the process Sixers just made it so, okay, now we're just going to punish teams for being bad even more than we already do?
I don't know. I've kind of got my tinfoil hat on for this one. I'm beginning to wonder if there's a... Of course, I think there's a lot of sports fans that think that their league is rigged for whatever reason.
I feel like most of them do.
Like, I'm sure if the Pistons got the number one pick, we're like, oh, finally, a nice, legitimate lottery. Fantastic. Love it.
I'm sure it wouldn't be legitimate, but you know what? It would at least be rigged in my team's favor, so I wouldn't care as much.
At least you're honest.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I admit, as the diehard that I am, that I don't care. Like, I accept that, yeah, it's all rigged, but I would just like to see the rigging benefit my team once in a while. Is that so much to ask? I don't feel like it is.
No, for some reason, Detroit, in all four major sports, we kind of get the shaft. You have to actually win out to get any love from your respective league, from the TV markets, the sports world as a whole.
it does kind of appear that way. Like, there's certain markets that just seem to be favored and others that not so much. I mean, there's the infamous NBA, the draft lottery, I think it was in the 80s, the frozen envelopes, like, allegedly. Like, yeah. There's we've heard about this stuff going back for years, and you'll never convince me that it's not fixed in some capacity whatsoever. And if the leagues were honest about it, you'd overhaul the play-in tournament. Like, I was fine with picks number 1, 2, and 3 having the best odds at the number one overall pick. Quite frankly, no one else should be able to get the number one overall pick, okay? That's where I'm at with it. No other team outside of the bottom three in the league should even have a chance to draft number one overall. And yet we're including teams like Atlanta, Golden State, Chicago.
Golden State, with as much as they won in the last 10 years?
Yeah, and they technically were eligible for the number one overall pick. All the bottom 14 teams all have a chance at that. And that absolutely should not be it. Like, if you're in any of... I want to make sure I'm... double-check this and make sure I'm right on it, but if the top 10 teams now have a chance at the playoffs, then in each conference,
yep.
Then the top 10 teams in each conference should not be eligible under any circumstances for the draft lottery. There should be at most 10 teams that are in play for that, but I would argue there should only be the bottom three. Maybe four if you're feeling charitable.
Sure.
Because that's how you have Atlanta somehow jump everybody to end up being the number one. Oh, would you look at that? Brooklyn also moved up. I mean, Houston's getting that pick, and they're actually going to pick at fourth, it looks like, now overall.
The Rockets are getting two in the top five?
The Rockets are getting, I believe they are getting, no, just one in the top five, because their pick this year is going to the Thunder. I mean, unless they trade up or something, which, you know, is always within the realm of possibility.
All right.
Like, it could very well happen. But I don't like how any of that's set up. At all. But here's the other thing to kind of play into this.
Sure.
No, the Pistons aren't getting the number one pick that they rightfully deserve. Does it even matter, though?
I haven't heard of that one marquee name. It's like, oh, my... Everybody needs this player.
There are none. It's basically a bunch of European players, the occasional G Leaguer. Like, there's not a whole lot out there, honestly. Like, your biggest couple players or a couple cats out of UConn, but like there's not a whole lot of like it's a pretty by a lot of NBA draft experts a fairly thin talent pool for this year. So if ever there was a year for you to not get the full advantage of getting the number one overall pick, I mean, at least you don't feel as bad about this year. Here's your other problem. You still, well, now after more than a month after the season has ended, you don't yet have the president of basketball operations, this new position that you've decided needs to happen, you don't have that guy hired yet. There's a lot of guys you can't even talk to right now, and everyone that you have been able to talk to has basically said, thanks, but no thanks. You're about a month and a half, or like a month and 2 weeks away from the draft. We don't know that The person who's going to decide whether or not Monty Williams and your current GM are sticking around hasn't been hired yet. And you're certainly not giving them a lot of time, if they are going to can them, to hire whoever that's going to be. We still don't have any idea. A month after they finished one of the most embarrassing seasons I've ever seen as a Pistons fan, we still don't know if Troy Weaver's coming back next year, and we don't know who's going to be leading this team come draft time. Like, yikes. Every possible way that you can play yourself into a complete and utter just a hole of incompetence, like, everything you can do wrong, you're doing. And it really just shows to me that Tom Gores is not serious as an owner.
No.
The fact that we're even still doing this, and you're going to end up settling for someone who is, you know, nobody in another organization.
And see, I don't know why, because so often, like for years, we talked about the Lions not ownership not really caring, because who cares? You're still selling tickets. I haven't seen the attendance numbers for the Pistons, but from what I understand, they haven't been very high.
You'd be surprised at how high the attendance is for the Pistons.
Really?
I wish I were.
Because it seems like, I mean, the times I have tuned in, maybe I just tuned in on a snoozing kind of game, but it just seemed like there were a lot of empty seats.
There are, but here's the thing. When you look at the average attendance from this last season, you know where the Pistons actually sit?
Where?
15th.
Middle of the pack, huh? Really?
Yeah, you're like just slightly above middle of the pack. Like, barely, but yeah, that's where you are. You're ahead of teams like the Spurs, who have one of the most exciting generational talents forever. You're ahead of the Warriors. You're ahead of the Timberwolves. You're ahead of the Bucks. You're ahead of actual, real basketball teams.
Wow.
And I don't understand how this is. Like, quite frankly, the fan base is to blame for this as much as anybody, because they're still buying enough tickets and still going to these games enough that it's not a full embarrassment to Troy Weaver yet. It's not really Tom Gores yet, either one of them, really.
Right.
And it's not sufficiently hitting these people in the pocketbook enough.
And once it does, that's when you're going to really start to see change. But
one can only
Gores
hope.
Is not going. I mean, if he's making money, why would he change?
He doesn't have to. He doesn't see it himself having to at that point. And that's the only thing that's going to change it up, I suppose. It's just amazing to me that, like, Pistons home games, like, for as awful as this team is, and the fact, especially, that it's not even like it's, like we said, it's not the process Sixers where you were actively trying to lose. It's a situation where you are just that bad, and this is the literal best you can do, and it's, by in a way, worse than literally everyone else, and you're still somehow moving 18,000-plus people through the turnstiles every night. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't get it.
But that's where it comes to me that none of this really matters all that much. Like, the draft lottery you could have gotten the number one pick, and this year it wouldn't have mattered at all because this entire draft class is trash. But do you even trust at this point that the people who are going to make that decision on who to take with now number five are even currently in this organization, and B, are going to make the right pick? I don't feel confident in it at all.
No.
I don't really want another offseason of Troy Weaver trying to shape this thing, because every move he's made thus far, with a few exceptions, has been terrible.
I mean, what do you think about Cunningham? Because it seems like he was supposed to be this big change, and it doesn't seem to have materialized.
You're going to end up trading him. He's not going to re-sign here, because you're not going to be able to build anything around him by the time his rookie deal's up.
Yep.
And I don't think you're going to be able to sell him on a vision of the future if he re-signs here. I don't think you can convince him at this point that there is a plan at all for what they're... I think they just hope, oh, we got Cade, and we'll figure it out the rest when we get there. Like, I honestly kind of believe that at this point. Because there's no way that then you would have drafted guys who, good as they may be, can't play with Cade.
Yep.
Like, your other high draft picks have been guys who, okay, these two cannot be on the same team. Like, they can't both... We can't facilitate having them both on here. They're too much of a similar player. They both need the ball too much. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it's just not going to work. But that being said, you have two more club options through, 2025 is when he becomes a restricted free agent. You're not going to convince him to sign here.
No.
It's not going to happen, because you're still going to be in dumpster fire land by then. Much as you are now.
Yes.
By the end of next season, there's no way. You have literally, within 6 months or so to actually put together something that looks like a path forward. And he doesn't want to be stuck here in the prime of his career. He's not going to want to commit to this and then see that, oh, nothing has changed and we're not really trying at all. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him in the slightest.
He's gonna feel like he's gonna waste his career in Detroit.
Because he basically is.
He'd rather go somewhere and give himself a chance.
And who can blame him?
No, I can't.
I certainly can't. He absolutely, if he's smart, if his agent's smart, they're gonna say, no, we're not re-signing here. Trade me at the deadline. Like, I would lay money right now.
That's where we need that drop from Slapshot. Tell Detroit, trade me right now.
Like, that's kind of, you have to know that that's a conversation that's playing out currently, and that's definitely going to play out before the deadline. Like, they know that he's not going to resign. They need to just go ahead and bite the bullet and ship him off next midseason and hopefully stack the war chest a bit, and then hopefully get someone who actually knows what to do with it. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yes.
We'll see if that actually happens, but it certainly would be nice. But right now, I don't think it matters if you pick 1st, 5th, 30th overall in the draft here. Like, if you can't trust the people who are going to be making these decisions, who cares?
Right.
It sucks to say, but that's kind of the holding pattern you're currently in this town with this team. A lot of stuff to get to, and some of it will hopefully be a little more uplifting than this. Stick around. It is happy hour. We'll be back right after this. All right, I guess since I did make you suffer through probably far more NBA talk than you were expecting to get on this show, literal ever, I suppose I owe you this, don't I? As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey, question mark?
Yes!
Last night, Vancouver Canucks took Game 3 against the Oilers. They now lead that series 2-1. That's a little bit of a shock. If they end up winning that series, that's going to be a big shocker.
I mean, I won't be that shocked, mostly because I called that series going the Canucks' way. But
it's a little rough because of all the injuries that Vancouver has. But
yeah, they've gone through quite a bit.
But then again, as we've said many times, Edmonton, they don't have a blue line. They hardly have a goalie. What they got is like really good scorers, but if you can shut them down, you've got that series. So this could go Vancouver's way.
And thus far, they've done a pretty decent job of that. I mean, the Canucks only gave up 3 goals last night, and well, they did lose in OT. They forced OT. Like they if you give up 3 goals a night, I mean, you should be able to generate more offense than that on most nights in the NHL if you're not facing a top-flight goalie.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're doing as much as can be expected from a goaltending room that is not exactly as strong as you were expecting coming into this thing. Because I got to give credit where credit's due here. Salah's faced like 42 saves last night against Vancouver. Like, they're putting good shots on him. They're putting a lot of shots on him. But you're not going to be mad at a guy who's making 39 saves a night.
Right.
So he's doing enough to let you to keep you in the games,
yeah,
and to let you do what you need to do. And certainly the offense is responding positively to that.
Brock Boeser with 2 goals and an assist. Very good work coming from him. Then you have...
Really the key throughout the playoffs for that team.
Yep. Carson Soucy, at the very end of the game, he gets a 2-minute cross-checking minor against Connor McDavid. He's going to be called on the carpet today in regards to... They're thinking that he might get a suspension for this big old... Because first of all, it's against McDavid. You can't be messing with the face of the league. You just can't.
Yeah, so, you know what that's exactly what that's going to result in. It's going to be a suspension.
They're going to lay down the hammer on that cat.
Absolutely they are, and that is a bit concerning for Vancouver, even with the series lead, honestly.
Yep. Panthers beat the Bruins 3-2. They now lead that series 3-1. I hate that.
Well, yeah, they're out dirtying Boston, who is a fairly dirty squad in their own right. Like, they're really beating that team at their own game.
Yeah.
And it is kind of nice to see, because Boston's been doing it and getting away with it for so long. It's nice to see another team go in there and give it right back to them. Like, how does it taste?
Yep. Marchan was out for that game. I don't know if he's going to be back for game 5.
Good.
So we shall see. Tonight, The bunch of jerks.
I might just get my prediction on that one.
Yeah.
We'll see you on Tuesday, I suppose.
Carolina Hurricanes taking on the Blue Shirts, the Rangers. I think Rangers are leading that series.
Yes, they are. They are leading 3-1. They have the opportunity to close it out tonight.
Ooh. Stars and Avalanche. Stars are.
We thought this was going to be a little closer series than it was.
I did, yeah. I think I got them in six.
We both have them in six, and looks like they could close out in five if all goes well. Then, yeah, Dallas and Colorado. Dallas is up 2-1 in that series.
Stars have been a really nice surprise this whole year. I could see a Dallas-Florida Stanley Cup final.
You know, it's starting to very much look that way. I think you could very much see that happen. Like, they're about as healthy as they get. They're coming out firing on all cylinders. And
if they're able to put the Avalanche to bed, I think they could take whoever comes out of that Canada series, whether it's Vancouver, Edmonton. I think if Dallas can get past the Avalanche, Dallas wins the West and we'll be heading to the big dance.
I can't disagree with any of that. Like, this team, it's not all been one guy by any means. I mean, Wyatt Johnson's leading your scoring thus far with 5 goals and 3 assists. But you've got multiple other guys who have multiple goals. Heiskanen, Robertson. And, yeah, Ottinger has been stellar in these playoffs so far. He's 212 goals against. He's only given up 22 goals through the entire playoffs thus far.
So what you're saying is Conn Smythe trophy candidate?
I think so. I think that could very much be the case if they get that far. I would not be surprised. Yep. If that were the case.
Dallas and Florida. How do you like that, Bettman? Two Southern teams going at it. You got to love that, don't you?
You know he loves every bit of that. You know, the rest of the hockey purists are going to hate it. The Canadians are going to hate it for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the biggest insult. Not only are we once again, for like the 30th year in a row, getting shut out of the playoffs, but we're also, or shut out of the Stanley Cup final, but we're also going to get two Southern teams in the Stanley Cup final.
Yay.
What a slap in the face. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. Stick around. It is happy hour, and it is about time for a round of our favorite bit that I do on this show, Sean Adams' unsolicited advice.
Okay.
We're real people with real problems, send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, I think we give better advice than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
Yes, we do enjoy doing these things. And if you at home want our advice, absolutely. How can they contact us, Sean?
How can they contact us? I don't have a clue. We don't have a working phone here.
We have Happy Hour on SSR on Facebook. Send us a private message. Tell us your situation, and we will take it from there.
I don't know if we really want to recommend that our listeners actually solicit advice from us, because A, then it's no longer unsolicited advice, and we don't really want people putting their like serious family and relationship matters in the hands of us two bozos.
Right.
But if you're feeling so inclined for whatever reason, I guess go ahead and send them along.
There you go.
Let's get into it, shall we? Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam, I am one of 7 siblings, biological, step, and adopted. I was always the odd duck out because I was a geek and a girl and more interested in learning about computers and having children. I taught myself how to code and worked my way up to a pretty cushy IT gig. My baby sister's only 14 and she started to get interested in my field. She wanted to take some computer classes at the local community college, but our parents couldn't afford it right now. So I stepped in and offered to pay for her and made her the promise that if she did well this summer, I would help pay for her higher courses. This has caused some serious family drama because several of my siblings are having financial troubles of their own making, gambling, credit card debt, having babies with unstable jerks, etc. And they think the only fair solution is to have me help fund everyone's lifestyle. I told them all to go kick rocks. The relationship I have with my baby sister is nowhere near what I have with my other siblings. A few are actually older than me, and more than one has given me serious grief over my interests. Worse, my parents and their partners have decided to weigh in on the matter. I am sick of the subject, but I can't completely ghost my family because of my baby sister. What do I do now?
Oh, this is simple. You know it's simple. Help your sister better herself and not sit there. And you're going to give money to somebody with a gambling problem? Let's think that through. Take a minute to let that comprehend. Let that simmer a little bit. It doesn't make sense. You're giving money to your little sister who otherwise is not going to have a chance to better herself. And you do with your money whatever you want. Is it going to cause some bad blood? Sure. But I mean, you really break it down. These people caused their own bad blood. They got themselves in financial hardships. They themselves got themselves in bad relationships.
Yeah, it's not your fault that all of them have made terrible life choices. And right. You say you can't ghost your entire family. Sure you can.
Absolutely you can.
I've seen it done all the time.
I mean, I'm sure you don't. There's some people that actually want to be around their family, Sean. I know, crazy as it sounds.
I don't know. I don't get that concept.
But I mean, the other people, what are you going to do? Not help your sister because you can't help everybody else? Or are you just going to all of a sudden just conjure up all this money, help her? And because I'm sure they're going to be like, well, you gave her X amount of dollars. You should give the same amount to everybody else. No, this is not how this works.
No, like you shouldn't be expected to support the rest of your siblings simply for the fact that they made poor life choices because you're helping this one who's actually trying to do the right thing.
Yes.
And also is not an adult, and they all apparently are.
Right.
Because I imagine I mean, they're all adults, or you're not getting into gambling debt and credit card debt if you're not of legal age.
All right.
Typically. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe a young adult, maybe 19, 20 years old.
We're talking a 14-year-old here in this case.
Yeah, 14 years old, taking college courses.
Right. So
this kid is doing the hustle. She's putting in the work. Absolutely, you want to cultivate that.
Absolutely. And you know, don't let your family tell you that you can't spend your money and help out your sibling as you please. Like, that's your money to do with what you want to do with it. There is nothing that says you have to be fair and equitable with that. You're not their parent.
No. You pay for her tuition to whatever she wants to do, and then you get the gambling person some scratch-offs. You get a self-help book to the person in bad relationships, and you call it, hey, say, I helped. So, you know, just make it work. Just help the kid.
Yeah, do what you want to do, which is clearly help the kid, and, you know, I'm not entertaining any more discussion about the matter. What I do with my money is my decision and mine alone, and if you can't deal with that, that's your problem, not mine.
Hey, it's not like she has to make this big announcement, hey, I'm helping my sister. No, you just sneak some money on the slide.
I'm going to assume that the sibling must have mentioned something, let something slip, because that's the only way I see that.
Yeah.
Having even come out. Yep. Like, look, kid, I'm going to help you, but don't you tell the rest of the family about this. Otherwise, it is going to be all your fault when I can't support you because the rest of your family is... Just pit her against the rest of the family with you, and that'll... I mean, clearly the family's already drama. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's your money. You do with it as you please.
And use it when you need it.
And if you choose it to help your sister, then good on you. Absolutely. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, like help your you know, you're helping your sibling try and not end up in the same cycle of bad decisions that literally almost all of her other siblings except one did, apparently.
Yep.
So, no, good on you. You should be commended for that, and you don't owe anybody an explanation for it.
And something tells me that they're, like, really deeply religious. So remember the part in the Bible where it says, give the man a fish and he eats for a day. Teach a man a fish and he eats for a lifetime. There you go. I use the Bible.
Good for you, I guess. That was unexpected, but here we are. Let's dive into one more of these real quick, shall we?
Yes.
Dear somebody who cares. I think I wrecked my husband's relationship with his brother and his family, and I don't know what to do now, and his brother doesn't know it, or at least I don't think so. Let me explain. When I first married and visited his brother's family, I of course wanted to be liked and play nice and get along. We were staying with them for a week. There was the brother, his wife, and they have three girls. One night, my sister-in-law was cooking and pulled me aside to let me in on a little joke. She was putting meat juice in my husband's food. He's a vegetarian.
Oh my God.
I was shocked but didn't want to make a fuss, so I just went along and laughed. Years went by, and one Thanksgiving after eating her meal, my husband had to get up and vomit. At first, we were surprised, but later it occurred to me that it was her little joke that made him vomit. Later, I confronted one of the daughters. She admitted it was a mistake to put that much meat juice in the stuffing this time, so after we came home, I told my husband all of it. Now he no longer wants to talk to them or see them. He takes their calls and it's nice, but won't call them, and his brother is starting to ask me what's wrong. I don't know if the brother knows about the so-called juicing, and he's a very critical guy who will always protect his perfect wife. So do I tell him what I know? Could it make a difference? My husband's feelings have been hurt to no end, knowing he was a butt of a joke for so long by people he thought loved him.
So, okay, she pulled him aside and say, hey, I've been sneaking meat juice in. Into the writer's husband. Okay, so the writer's husband is...
Look what I've been doing. I've been poisoning your husband. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
She should have put the stop to that right away because, I mean, if you're a vegetarian and you've cut meat out... Because I know because I dated one for a long time. That you get meat in there, it will make you sick.
Yeah.
And it's just not a good idea. I mean, being a vegetarian is still weird and against our biological makeup. But you know what? You do you.
Right, I don't get paid nearly enough to justify your dietary decisions.
Right. She has really buried herself because, A, does she do the honest thing, what she should be doing,
mm-hmm.
and come clean and say, hey, yeah, they've been juicing you. Or, she has a... Or you just let it go because, I mean, if you tell him... Then she has to admit, yeah, I've known all this time, and we've all been kind of laughing about it, and that's gonna really put you in a bad situation.
I mean, obviously she's now told the husband what happened, and he's decided that, well, I can't trust any of you people. Like, I assume she also told him that, yeah, she had told me this way back, I didn't think anything of it. But and now that you know.
Because now the husband won't call him back, blah, blah, blah. So basically, if I understand the question, should she tell him that she's always known? Is that what we're going with here? Is that the question?
Well, no. So the question is, she's like, what if the brother's reaching out to me, like, why won't your husband talk to us anymore? Should she tell him?
Oh, okay. Yeah, tell the brother. I mean, the brother should know why his brother doesn't want to talk to him.
Well, except it sounds like it's going to start more drama for you to put that out there. If the husband wants to tell him, then let him do that. Like, he can fight his own battles with his own family.
That's actually a little bit more...
You're not going to bring anything to the situation more than just working them up more and just increasing the drama and making it worse, ultimately.
Yeah, okay, yeah, let's go with that one. So, yeah, just stay pat, quiet down, don't say anything to the brother. Let the brothers work it out between themselves.
Yeah, if they're going to work it out, they can do that on their own terms. You just go ahead and stay out of it. You've done enough, I would say. Want to do one more?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and bust one last one of these out. Dear, oh God, it's them, isn't it? My wife works 2 days a week, and I work full-time in a hybrid situation. I can and do work from home a couple times a week, and it's very flexible, so I can often help out with the kids and give her some time to herself. I work 50-plus hour weeks routinely and frequently find myself burning some midnight oil at least once a week to meet deadlines. I don't sleep much, and it's affecting my health. I'm doing my best to keep up with my work obligations, help around the house, and be a good husband and father. Our house is often a disaster, exceedingly messy, to the point where we can't have anyone stop by our place unless we know they're coming well in advance. I've recently become resentful about the time I'm taking away from life to cook, clean, keep yard work under control, and fix the many issues we have on our property. I think my wife can do more on the domestic front, seeing as she works 2 days a week. I feel like it's a misogynistic task, but if the roles were reversed, and they have been, I ran a much tighter ship and kept a cleaner home. When our youngest was born, I stayed home for close to a year and approached our home like my job. I sort of miss it, but my current profession is too lucrative to walk away from. I'd like my wife to spend less time watching TV or on social media and more time pulling her weight around the house, but I don't want to sound like Don Draper. Am I being unreasonable?
No, you're not. I mean, I will say that I don't know how old the kids are, but I know that small kids take especially when they're crawling and getting into everything, they take a lot of time. You can't just go out and mow the lawn. You just can't just go out and do this and do that. But because you got to watch this kid,
make
sure it's not shoving a key in the light socket or anything like that.
Yeah, you don't need that kind of.
But in your life, if she's has that much time to watch TV, she should be able to pick up a little bit.
You got time to lean, you got time to clean.
Yeah, exactly. And you put it to her just like that, right on Mother's Day.
Yep. That'll ensure that you're getting a divorce like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're not unreasonable, but Be tactful, brother.
Yeah, be
tactful.
Careful how you approach this. You might die.
Yeah.
There might be kitchen knives aimed at your head. Like, you might find out, oh, someone's been taking knife throwing lessons.
Yeah. So, what'd you get done today, honey?
What'd you do all day while I was actually out, you know, winning the bread for the household?
Yeah.
Thank you. I cannot do that for the life of me.
So, yeah. I mean, I have been in situations like that. But I've also been on the other side where it's like, you know, I have a couple days off, like a week off vacation or whatever. And, you know, it can take a lot out of you. A small kid, especially Joey, he's going to be walking here any minute now. And so then,
good luck.
He's already fast enough. I mean, he can crawl faster than I can speed walk, and he gets into everything. So it's, if she has to deal with a small kid or small kids, plural, you know, that's probably a lot of her time right there. But that's when you put them down for a nap. Then you do the dishes. So you pick up clothes, do a load of laundry. You know, you can fold laundry while watching TV.
I know it. Crazy as it sounds, you can
listen to things while doing the dishes. Put a TV in the. There's TVs in kitchens all the time while they do dishes. I've seen it happen. Makes
sense. Been a thing since like the 50s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I usually do. Like if I'm watching or listening to something, that's usually when I'm getting my laundry folded or doing, you know, say production work for a local regional music show.
Yeah.
That's
I cannot do the dishes without listening to like a podcast or something like that, because it just it makes it work tedious.
Now that I finally actually have a pair of working Bluetooth headphones, because I, of course, you know, total side note here.
Yeah,
we finally got our first generation of phones where we don't have a cord out anymore. And I finally, yesterday on our way back from, we stopped at Sweetwater in Fort Wayne, and, you know, it's, you know, music store. It's like basically Disneyland for musicians.
Sure.
I'm like, all right, I think I need to finally break down, get myself a pair of actual Bluetooth headphones for this thing.
Cool.
And, yeah, I feel like that's going to be a game changer. Probably going to be a lot less annoying for Rachel because, you know, I'm half deaf, and it's certainly going to help with, okay, would you turn that racket down?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I usually do it when all the kids are like out of the house. Basically, I get a lot of work done when there's nobody in the house. So I will just have my Alexa device doing like stand-up comedy or something like that.
And my problem is my free time is usually at like 2, 3, 4 in the morning.
Yeah, you're going to need those headphones.
Yeah, exactly. I can't really... I can't be playing the music in whatever full blast while Rachel's directly upstairs sleeping and can hear everything.
Yeah, if she's hearing dishes clattering because you're washing them, she's not going to be as upset as, you know, hearing somebody like prattle on about the Tigers.
Exactly. So that's anyway. But back to the issue at hand here.
You're not wrong to want your wife to pick up some of that little extra slack, but I mean, also realize that she's not, this is not a Peg Bundy kind of situation. She's getting some stuff done. She is, and she's working 2 days a week. I mean, I've had a situation where, you know, a woman I was with didn't work at all.
And you guys didn't even have kids.
No, still didn't get anything done. That got frustrating. So I can see the writer's point of view, but just understand that, you know, your wife is accomplishing things, but asking her to do a little bit more is not, you're not wrong for asking for a little bit more.
It's not an unreasonable thing, certainly.
But like I said before, tact. Be tactful.
Yeah, be careful how you approach this situation, because this is a time bomb waiting to explode.
Oh, yeah. Especially if she's been dealing with a kid for 8 to 10 hours and you come home, oh, where's dinner? Why isn't the house not clean? What? Oh, you probably watched soap operas all day, didn't you?
Yeah. Now, it doesn't say how old the kids are. Like, that's also kind of a thing. Like, because there is time that, okay, the kid, because it mentions, oh, when the kids were younger, I stayed at home, like, you know, after they were born or whatever. Like, if they're in school all day, I feel like there's less of an excuse.
Oh, if there's no kids chasing around, yes. You need to, you know, if there's a certain show you want to watch that you can't listen to while doing something like that, give yourself like a little break. You know, it's my lunch hour. I'm going to watch Young and the Restless, or I'm going to watch, one of the many courtroom shows out there.
And the thing is, especially in his case,
yeah,
because he said he did it when he was first, when they first had the kid, he was like stay at home full time. And he made it sound like, oh, yeah, I got all the things done so the wife didn't have to worry about it. So it's not also like he's approaching it from a, you clearly don't know what this takes because you've never done it.
Right.
He kind of does.
He does. He's been there. But it sounds like he's a little bit more of the task-driven kind of personality where she's maybe not so much.
It certainly seems that way.
So yeah, there you go. Hope that helped. Just tell her she's being lazy and, hope for the best.
And we'll look forward to hopefully not hearing your obituary in the next news break.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we've got to hit a break and get a check of your forecast. Currently, you are sitting at 78 degrees in lovely downtown Lapeer. In downtown Sandusky, you're currently at 73 degrees under cloudy skies. John McMurray has the details of your forecast next, right here on the Voice of the Thumb, WMIC 660 and 95.3 FM. So apparently we are getting close to having the Lions quarterback situation locked in for a significant amount of time to come.
Yeah.
Just saw this come across the wire from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. Apparently, discussions about Goff's future have been optimistic. He's expected to be the next quarterback to land an extension.
Ooh.
I know, I'm rather excited about this. So on SportsCenter over the weekend, Fowler goes out there and says, the Lions are on record that Jared Goff, signing him to an extension is a high priority, so they are working on this. The feeling around the league from the people I've talked to is that Goff will be the next quarterback to score that mega deal. You've got Tua Tagovailoa in Miami, Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, some others like maybe Dak Prescott down the road, but Goff and the Lions seem to be the closest. Nothing imminent right now, but they insist this is something they've been talking about, and the Lions are committed to keeping their core together.
Oh, Detroit definitely wants to keep Goff. Does Goff still want to be in Detroit? I mean, he had
absolutely a good season.
I hope so.
You don't think he does? I mean, you had him come out where he had been piled on by not only the Rams fan base, but by his own head coach. He just got bodied by Sean McVay.
Yes, he did.
Just thrown under the bus. Like, when they got Stafford talking about that this was the piece that was bringing, like, basically just throwing all of the shade at Jared Goff. Like, no one wanted him there. Meanwhile, this city loves this man so much that you'd hear his name getting chanted at Red Wings and Tigers games. Like, like we were opening day, I'm pretty sure I heard a couple Jared Goff chants.
Yep.
Like, no, absolutely. This town loves this man. This team loves him. He got them as far as any QB in the last 60 years has done. Yes, everybody wants him back, except for a handful of talk radio doomsayers who are just mad that they weren't right that the Stafford for Goff trade was lopsided in favor of L.A.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just looking at it from Goff's standpoint. I mean, if he was spurned. He's got to have felt that. But now he can show what he can do. Nice little audition tape. And now maybe he can make that kind of money somewhere else and have a guaranteed chance to win.
If he got this team within a half hour, 30 minutes of a Super Bowl last year, if this team can get over the top and actually do that, this man will be a folk hero in Detroit for the next century. He'll never be able to buy a drink in the city of Detroit again.
Yep.
He'll basically be like the most beloved man this city has ever seen.
I hope it happens.
Why would you not want to be part of that, considering you're bringing back basically all the cast that got you that close last year, and you shored up most of the liabilities from last year's roster, namely your secondary? Like, you've done a lot to improve, and you kept the core guys. You extended Amon-Ra. You extended Penei Sewell. You've got this thing locked up and set to be a contender for a while. You have a guy in Brad Holmes who drafts as good as any GM in the National Football League and isn't a guy who's going to just be flippant about giving up draft picks for things. Like, he's going to go and build, he knows to build a team through the trenches, and he's building it the right way. Why would you not want to stay here if you're Jared Goff? Like, you don't have to be, like, you don't have to play hero ball here. And that's the other thing, because Jared Goff is not necessarily suited up to be a hero ball kind of guy. He's, I'm not going to say a game manager, but you're not relying on him to just be making just ridiculous circus throws and out of this world throws and things. Like, you have guys who complement what he does. And nowhere else that he's going to go, I don't think, is going to be able to offer him from, not necessarily from a financial standpoint, but from just a whole team perspective, what he has here in Detroit.
I hope he does. I hope he stays.
I think he will. Now, that being said, the price tag. Because I know that that's what a lot of you are thinking out there. How much is this going to cost the Lions to get this deal done? And per Mr. Fowler over at ESPN, Amon-Ra St. Brown kept him on a huge four-year deal. Right tackle Penei Sewell, four-year deal. So Goff could be the next with a four-year deal. The market is pretty clear, though. You're looking at $50-plus million for a lot of these quarterbacks per year. We'll see how far the Lions are willing to go. If the price is $50 million, do you do it? Do you pull the trigger on that?
Well,
4 years, $50 million. I don't know what how much you would guarantee on that, but if that's the offer on the table, if that's what Jared Goff's agent is coming to you, general manager of the Detroit Lions, with, do you do it?
If that's the market price, then yeah, probably. But can the Lions afford that?
Absolutely, they can afford it. So here's the fun thing about the NFL: the salary cap is not entirely real. Like, for one, you're getting constantly more money in through renegotiating TV deals and things of that nature. Like, there's room for the salary cap to go up significantly further than what it is. There's always ways that you can move money around to ultimately do whatever you need to do. Like, there's never really a point where, okay, we can't make this work at all. Like, there are contracts you can move off the books. Also, keep in mind, Cameron Sutton's deal may yet be basically voided out if you go and spend that money. Because that, now that he, you know, he disappeared from the team and did what he did, he essentially kind of voided his deal, and you're not going to get dinged for that as long as you go and spend that money. So there's that to keep in mind.
Yep.
He signed through just this season, and looking ahead to future years here, we'll start the 2025 season. You've got a cap space of $95 million. And that is with your number one wideout already locked in. That is with an elite offensive lineman in Penei Sewell locked in. And also keeping in mind, there's no guarantee that Frank Ragnow is going to play next year, because the talk has been that, you know, he might retire.
Yeah, I keep hearing that too.
He keeps, like, he's played with injuries, and it might not be enough for him to give it one more go with the team. So that's $14 million that could potentially come off the books. Or I think the dead cap would be like $8.4 million. So that's at least, like, you know, $6 million coming off the books at that point.
Yep.
But you have most of your key players locked in. You've got, you know, these young guys that Brad Holmes keeps finding in the draft that aren't going to cost you an arm and a leg. You have the room to give Jared Goff a $50 million deal if that's what you so choose to do. You'll probably have close to $100 million in cap space to work with at the end of this season. I mean, other teams seem to manage to do it. I mean, we saw KC broke the bank for Pat Mahomes, and they've still got $22 million under the cap for future years. Like, there's a lot of teams that have handed out money to guys that still have a decent amount of space to work with. And you've got the fourth most cap space as of right now, going into the 25 season when that contract extension would start. You have the fourth most cap space of any team in the NFL.
Just what if...
And he's like the one guy that needs to really be re-signed to lock in your core going forward.
The stars are all kind of aligning, so I get it. But what if he... You sign him for this contract, and all of a sudden the Jared Goff that couldn't get it done in L.A., happens. Now we're like, oh, that's what McVay was talking about.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. I really honestly don't. I mean, yeah, you can teams get burned on signing guys who don't end up panning out to be what they were all the time. Hi, Deshaun Watson. Like, these things happen. I get it. But that's a problem to be dealt with later, because right now he's playing the best football of his career.
Yep.
And he's in a very good position.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm just saying, you know, what if?
Yeah, that's fair. And also keep in mind that, like, there are teams that are like, yeah, okay, they're in negative cap land. That just kind of, that's just a thing apparently that occasionally happens. San Fran, Cleveland, and New Orleans actually for 25 have negative cap space. New Orleans has like a negative 100 mil.
But, I mean, in the NFL, don't you just pay a luxury tax and you can just keep playing, right?
It's not quite like that, but there are certainly ways of navigating. I mean, that's what guys like Rod Wood are paid to do. They're paid to crunch the numbers and figure out how you can move money around to get under the official, like, the cap that you need. Also, the Lions, let's see, active 53-man roster. Yeah, you're talking like 178 mil that they've got tied in, which the cap maximum. And this is just projected, because this could go up depending on what the TV deals are. And like we've said, they're talking about adding not only an 18th game to the season, that means ultimately another slate of nationally televised games that are going to go to somebody.
Yeah.
Like, someone's going to be paying even more money out. So that 273 mil that the cap is projected to be next season could jump up significantly after that. That's why I say the salary cap's not real. There's not really, like, you can make moves to get around a lot of this. You can get guys to, you know, restructure deals when needed to make all the numbers work. And with the way the NFL rights deals are going, you're going to have the money.
Yep.
Like, there's no doubt about it. You're going to have the money to make Jared Goff probably, at least at the time he signs, the highest paid QB in the league, I would imagine. Like, I hope so.
I hope it happens. I really do.
I do too, because you just haven't had in quite some time, you haven't had a guy who is as loved by the fan base and getting the results here. Like, you never see him going out and throwing anybody under the bus. Like, the guys that you have here have very much committed to that Dan Campbell culture of, you know,
the blue collar work ethic.
You know, the team above self kind of thing.
Yep.
Like, you do kind of see that everyone here buys into that. Like, it's why I was really glad that you didn't go after certain Odell Beckham Juniors in the offseason. And who was the other guy they were linking here in trade talks? Stephon Diggs. Like,
were they really?
I mean, the Lions weren't actually discussing it, but there are people saying that the Lions should go after him.
Really?
Well, yeah, we talked about that multiple times on the show.
I don't remember.
He was just, he wanted out of Buffalo and he ended up with Houston ultimately. But I think there's a good chance he might not be the highest paid QB in the league total, because Joe Burrow is making 55 mil a year right now. But he'll definitely be, I would say, in the top five. Like, he could get at least Jalen Hurts money. Hurts is making 51 mil right now. Like, he'll be top 10 guaranteed. And I would imagine even more than that by the time all is said and done. And ultimately, I'm good with it, because he's such a good presence on this team. He has, like, all the right situation around him to be able to thrive. And for the most part, thus far, he has done that. Hopefully it happens. Hopefully it happens soon. It'd be nice to not have to speculate and worry about, oh, God, the Lions are going to try and trade Goff at the deadline if something, you know, doesn't get done. I'd like to not have that distraction, because it's been really nice having a team that hasn't been plagued with a bunch of distractions and off-field drama, you know, minus certain cornerbacks going missing and whatnot. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour. Stick around. Did I expect that we would be breaking news on this show today? No, I didn't. But yet, it just is the kind of the way it worked out. Jared Goff, like, literally since the last segment, Jared Goff has signed a four-year, $212 million deal with your Detroit Football Lions.
Includes $170 million guaranteed. according to ESPN.
That's not bad. I am good with that. So you now have him signed through the 2028 season. He's scheduled to make $27.5 million next year, including a $5 million roster bonus due the third day of the league year. So you're going to be paying him $53 million. Oh, my God. So it's I pretty much just called it, didn't I?
Yeah, you're right.
I told you it wasn't going to be Joe Burrow money, but I said it was going to be in the top five. And, in fact, puts you ahead of Patrick Mahomes now as the second highest paid QB in the league. And I believe you said the highest paid player in Lion franchise history.
Correct.
I mean, this is a celebration, man. Like, I am so happy about this.
Yeah.
You're not going to have to worry about quarterback drama going into next season. This is exactly how I was hoping this was going to go.
Yep.
I figured, okay, you're paying at least $50 million at this point. That's kind of the going rate.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, with the exception of, like, Kirk Cousins, who got handed $45 million in the offseason by the Falcons, and apparently that team didn't feel that strongly about it as they went and drafted his replacement already. But you are now getting paid like an elite quarterback, and I think he can be that guy. I said in the last segment, a lot of people kind of had the idea that, oh, this is just a bridge guy. He's just here until we draft the next real QB of the future and move on from him. I think a lot of people were legitimately convinced that Hendon Hooker was going to be that guy. I never was, and I was never particularly high on him from the get. I now can honestly say I don't think he's ever going to play a snap for your Detroit Lions. I will put that, you can quote me on that if you want. Hendon Hooker will never play a down for the Detroit Lions.
It's a good day to be a Detroit Lions fan.
Yes, it is. All of the moves made this offseason, like, it all feels like it's coming together, like, very well, doesn't it? You locked in Penei Sewell. You locked in Amon-Ra. You've now locked in Jared Goff. You've solidified at corner where you honestly had kind of a questionable secondary room before. You've done all the things that really needed to be addressed. I would like to see that edge rusher come in, but, you know, apparently we really just have that much faith in James Houston. Okay, fine. We'll roll with it. You drafted additional help in the offensive line, which you're going to need if Ragnow does end up retiring after this season.
Yeah.
But every move they've made thus far, I'm happy with. Every move they've made, like, I have no complaints about any of it. You've only improved yourself. You haven't downgraded anywhere. It's a good day for Lions fans.
There you go.
Absolutely is. No argument from me about that.
Hold your head up high, Lions fans.
You finally have a top flight QB who wants to be here. And not only wants to be here, but is playing the best he has in his career. And I imagine this is going to be, I mean, you had an offense, so last year you finished top five in points scored. And top five in total passing and rushing yards. You're bringing back all your O-line, basically. Bringing back Ben Johnson, who we also thought was going to be a goner this offseason.
Yep.
Like, everything that got you to where you were, you're bringing back. And this was not long after the Super Bowl, you had the fourth best odds to win a title next year. And I don't know if the odds necessarily go up with that, with this news, but it's got to make you feel real good about where you're going in the playoffs this year.
Yes. Definitely optimistic.
As well, I feel like, and this is a weird situation to be in as a Lions fan, is it not?
It feels uncomfortable, to be honest with you, because I'm just not used to this.
I'm optimistic and, like, waiting, like, looking forward to next season as a Lions fan, and I've not had that at really any point in my life.
How soon do we got to wait until the next schedule's out?
Wednesday. Comes out on Wednesday.
Oh, like, no kidding.
All the schedules per NFL Network will be released at 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday night on NFL Network and ESPN. Because, yes, the NFL, and I have to say, give them credit for this, they make everything an event. Even just the release of the schedules for the season, like, turns into a primetime event. Which, I mean, admittedly, can be a bit fatiguing because the NFL always keeps itself front and center of the news cycle year-round except for literally that break between the draft and training camp.
Yep.
Although, after this, I think you are back to, okay, there's nothing really going on until training camp starts. We have about a two-month break, just long enough to make you miss football. But in this case, at least in my case, I'm ready. Bring it all on now.
There you go.
Ready for it.
Who do you think the Lions – let's see if we can try to guess. Who do you think the Lions are going to play on Thanksgiving?
I imagine it'll probably be the Packers or something.
Put me down for Baltimore.
I don't think it'll be Baltimore. I doubt you're playing. Here's what
they'll play: the Cowboys.
That'd be hilarious. I actually have the list of the teams that you play this season. We don't have the schedule, but we do have the teams that you're going to play. So the home opponents, obviously Packers, Vikings, Bears, Rams, Seahawks, Jags, Titans, Bills, and Bucks. So it's going to be one of those eight or nine teams that are going to be your Thanksgiving
opponent.
My money's on the Pack.
I'll say Minnesota.
I mean, it could be the Bears, too. I'd say the Packers are my first guess. Then probably the Bears would be next. I mean, unless they set up the Rams, wouldn't that be something?
Ooh, oh, that'd be a storyline.
Stafford v. Goff again.
Yes.
The rematch. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. That would be a good storyline. I would like that a lot.
I mean, I feel like you already kind of got a lot of that out of the way when you beat them in the playoffs, but it would still be, I feel like it would be kind of the NFL thing to do to set up that matchup. But
sure.
I feel like it's going to be a divisional matchup more than likely against the Pack if I'm a betting man. We're about out of time. We got to get the hell out of Dodge. Stick around, though. A full hour of local original something or other happens at 6
local
o'clock.
Local original music. Michigan-made music at its best.
All coming up next on Sessions. We actually finally got to break news on this show.
Isn't that great?
I feel like we never get to do this.
No. No, it's usually they wait till like 6:01 or 7:31, and then that's it. Well, that's when they break the... Because I remember when Blake Griffin came to Detroit like right after the show.
Right. Every contract extension for a GM we hate always seems to come like on a Friday as soon as we're done doing radio for the day.
Yep.
Every single time. Like, enough so where I want to commandeer Sessions and just start screaming about it when they do that. Anyway, we got to go. Sessions is next. See you tomorrow at 3.